Hello guys, and welcome to the first episode of the Outspoken Introverts podcast with myself. I'm not going to give my name away just yet. Well, I have a few names if you know me, and if you don't, you don't need to know. And my co-host, who is Ash. Hello Ash, how are you?
I'm all right. I mean, are you going to give your name or not?
I will give my name as Michael.
Right, yeah.
Fair game. Fair.
Nobody else will get that, but fair enough.
No. There'll be a large handful of people who get it, and that's all they need to know.
I just think the irony is here.
Yeah.
That the podcast straight off the bat is Outspoken Introverts, and you basically reveal my identity straight away.
But yeah, people need to know who they're talking to. No, not talking to, listening to even. They need to know a gist of it. Do you know what I mean?
Because you've done it straight away. You've called me out from the bat. But anyway, I tell you what.
I've given my name. One of my names.
It sounds weird.
It is weird.
It sounds like a mystery.
No, because ironically, I'm just going to quickly go back to something. The other week at work, I won't reveal workplace, someone said to me, you came up on my Facebook, but it wasn't you, but it was you. And I was there like, thank you very much. And then I quickly moved on. And
now you wonder though, the people listening, you know, or that one person that might be listening, now you're wondering why he's got multiple names, multiple aliases.
I explained the reason. And
it's a legal reason. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Anyway, look, the title of this, Outspoken Introverts,
the last thing we could think of.
No. We thought of many other things. Yeah. Genuinely, days on end, and everything I searched was taken. And 90% of the things that were taken did three episodes or three lots of something. And I'm hopeful we can get to at least two. I'm hopeful we can do more than that. I genuinely, at one point, was going to message some of these people because the names we really liked, the names stuff off, you know, that you came to your head and worked. And like I said, these people haven't done it since 2021, which was a COVID thing, obviously, or something or other. Mm. But frustrating when all of a sudden you can't use that.
Well, you do wonder if there's like a grace period.
Yeah.
A bit like, because I think there's one for copyright, but I believe it's like 7 years or something crazy like that.
Okay.
But basically, after so long, you can't then claim that somebody...
It's yours anymore.
You off. It's got to be some kind of cut-off.
Look, 7 years, if we're still doing this in 7 years, something's either gone horribly wrong or horribly right.
We'll still be doing it in your kitchen. I'd like to hope we've moved from the kitchen.
Look, as long as you don't throw my address out there, it's good with me.
See, that was going to be part of your intro.
Yeah, this is my name, this is where I live. I'm not actually introverted like I thought I was. You know,
send
never mind.
All your fan mail to this address.
Fan mail, wow. So, Mum, if you're listening,
that's what a postbox is for. PO box.
Oh God. But yeah, look, we're here.
Yeah.
We spoke last year. We said, look, we're coming to an age. We were both turning 30 this year. We were coming to an age where we said, look,
we've done nothing with our lives. Is what you're saying. This is it now.
I remember the exact conversation. I said, look, we either need to start a band or a podcast.
You did say that, yeah.
And you're back in the studio,
I am back in the band, and
you're doing this. And look, you've tipped both off. I'm still waiting for my audition. I am, you know, doing the vocal cords as we speak. So I think there might be a little chance.
I mean, you've probably got more chance of singing at the minute than I have because I've got a cold, so the throat is sore. It's not happening at the minute. So it's a good job I'm not really recording anything where it requires me to sing, unless you are including a singing segment in the podcast.
Well, we did. Well, no. To be fair, we did. I did suggest you doing the intro, you sing the theme music, make the theme music, all that kind of. You know, we did suggest that.
Awesome,
But then I heard your voice, and I said, you know what? Let's not put people off before they've started.
Yeah. So basically, Michael's now going to sing a song that he wrote.
Just for the three listeners at home. Hello, Mum, Nan, and Dad. Hope you're all well.
I don't think your dad will be listening.
No, he listens to podcasts.
Okay.
He does. Travels for work.
Have you told him about this?
No. I've not told... I've told one person about this, and that was a drunken... Oh, no, I've told two people.
Oh.
My partner being one, that was not the drunken one. I mean, and a friend on the way, and a friend not round here, you weren't. And a friend being in the other moment, a drunken thing. So yeah. I think we need to kind of explain the notion and the name behind it though.
Yeah.
I am quite an introverted person, and obviously you are too.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain A, how you realise you're introverted,
yeah,
and B, what that means to you? Because to me, I think when we actually went through it, you then kind of suggested I was not as introverted as I probably thought, and in some ways probably extroverted in some kind of day-to-day things, should we say?
I think it's interchangeable, because I think that you, in some situations, you can be extroverted and have that confidence. I think a lot of it does come down to confidence, because... Mm-hmm. That is something that I feel that I lacked growing up, which is where I think it came from. A lot of self-esteem issues, a lot of confidence issues. I was a quiet kid, shy.
Yeah.
My mum always says that I had an old soul, which makes a lot of sense, because mm-hmm. I was a very sensible child, wouldn't do anything like crazy, whereas my younger brother, was the complete opposite, which they say anyway happens with younger siblings. Like, say, for example, there's a water slide.
Right, okay.
I'm at the top going, what if I break my neck, or you know, what if I slip here, or what if something's going to go
wrong? You weigh up all the potential risks.
Whereas my brother...
He's already at the bottom.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone.
He pushes you down to get himself down.
Which I'm envious of in some ways, because in some ways I would like to have that kind of, not a disregard, but almost I don't know how you would put it, but to have that, I suppose, confidence to just jump into something. I think about it too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, overthinking. I think that's something that I've got from childhood.
Yeah.
In terms of being introverted, though, I don't know what it is. I think it kind of, like I say, I was shy and quiet growing up. And I think that I would prefer to kind of be on my own reading a book in a corner rather than kind of like interacting with other kids and stuff like that. Not that I didn't have any friends, but I had limited friends.
Yep.
And I've been like that ever since. So I'm quite a private person, mm-hmm. keep myself to myself. And
yep.
I think that, to me, is what introverted means, in terms of you're not really... You don't conform to society as much as others, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really bothered about being the popular kid. You're not bothered about...
Good job.
...being the centre of... Well, you're not bothered about being the centre of attention, because you just don't have that... You don't have that within you. I don't think you just don't have that desire to be that person.
I think you're born. You are born with it and have it like an innate ability to be so. And like you say,
something happens and you become that way. Yeah.
I don't think you just gradually become something. Like, I think, like you say, you're either. I think what you said about you and your brother, me and my brother are the same, but with the opposite. So I'm the younger,
yeah.
But he would be the outgoing, adventurous, whatever. He will just do whatever, climb the monkey bars, whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be there like, I'm okay, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And
not that you could climb the monkey bars as a kid, though.
No, no, I could. Oh, Lord, no. Not a chance.
Definitely
not between the ages of like 11 and 17.
See,
I would,
now,
yeah.
No problem.
Not an issue now.
Now he's.
I mean, it's weird if I'm climbing monkey bars.
To climb monkey bars down at the park all the time, across the road. It's convenient, isn't it?
Well, I do get some weird looks when I'm pushing, you know, little kids off. Okay, we're going somewhere with that. We are absolutely going somewhere with that.
No, wait. That sounded like a bit like a confession to me.
Confessions is episode two. You see,
it was going that way though.
No, it's a confession if it's true.
I'd steer that course.
Yeah, I'm gone. See you later.
He's not talking about it anymore.
Nope, gone.
He changed his name. Just going to put that out there.
Yep, basically. So obviously, that was kind of younger life and growing up.
Yeah.
What about like this day and age? What, like, if you were to put yourself in a social situation where you could explain it, because I know how I do, but what would you... Yeah. Let's say you got invited to a party, like a birthday party, yeah. But it was with people who, it's not your family and friends, essentially.
Yeah.
How does, you know, when you get that invite, what does that make you feel? How does that make you feel?
Anxious, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know, because sometimes it'll be a case of, I see it as an opportunity to meet new people, or I see it as, it's kind of like, because you're aware that you're introverted,
yep.
You almost... when you get that invitation, you think, right, this is an opportunity here to come out of your shell a bit, mm-hmm. to meet some people, have a nice time. But I know deep down that 10 minutes in, because it doesn't matter like how early in the night it is, you've not had that much to drink, right?
So oh, Lord, no.
You'll be standing in that kitchen, which is what normally where the party is in a house party. Mm-hmm. You'll be standing in there looking at all these people you don't know and thinking, I do not want a beer. And I think that if you do go, that's what I'm going to feel. That's exactly why I probably would say, I'm all right, I'll give it a miss, or I'll make an excuse. The other side of that is I'll get an invitation and I'll feel like, yeah, I can do this. I'll go to this party and whatever. And then it'll come closer to the day and all of a sudden I'm like, no, I can't do this. I need to make an excuse. Or I don't know, just say I'm not feeling up to it anymore. But what is that? In terms of, it feels like anxiety, because it feels like anxiety.
Yeah.
But then I don't know where that stems from. Does it stem from childhood? It seems like it does, because I was probably similar in childhood. But then I can always remember going to other kids' birthday parties and being fine and playing with friends. Yeah. And I don't know where it changed. Some of it makes me think, did it change when I hit puberty, when I became a teenager? Yep. Did it change when I went to secondary school? Because secondary school was like a different level in terms of like social acceptance and bullying, etc. It changed massively. In junior school, everyone's kind of still on that level of, everyone's still equal in a way. That no one splits off into like little social groups.
Yeah.
For me anyway, that was my experience. My junior school was kind of, all of our class wanted to stay together. It was still that.
Well,
it was like a last vestige of like innocent childhood.
Well, yeah, because I imagine if you like me and most schools at that time, you had a class of 25, 30.
Yeah.
And that was
and
your
you
class.
You kind of stayed with them like
growing up.
Years,
yeah.
And that's why at the end of, it's quite sad when I think about it now, because at the end of year six, everyone's going, oh, I hope we all stay together. And then everyone just splits.
Naturally,
either they go
to
different schools, mm-hmm. or you go to the same school. Like I was all on the same campus, so I went up to secondary school, and then people just naturally drifted. But you don't expect it. Some people do and some people don't. I did not. So to me, like I made a lot of cool friends. Like I was really happy at junior school, and then I mean there was still like a fair share of bullying, but it was like one or two kids.
Yeah,
and nobody got on with them because they bullied everybody. Whereas in secondary school, everybody bullies everybody else. It's like the situation is exacerbated because no one knows what's going on in their own minds, in their own bodies.
Yeah.
I think that going into secondary school, reaching that age and becoming adolescent, it just changes something. Everyone's social perceptions change. Everyone's trying to fit in. No one knows what their own emotions are doing. And before you know it, the friends that you used to speak to in junior school have gone off and like some of them are part of the popular group or whatever, and they just change. People just naturally change. So I found myself becoming, like I learned to play the guitar and stuff like that, so I found myself just kind of going and playing the guitar at school, like just going in a quiet corner and playing the guitar.
And that was you?
That was me.
Yeah.
Because I still have friends and I still played like football and stuff at lunch with my friends and things like that, and I'd like took part in things there, but then I don't know, just it never felt like I was really part of, not the popular group, but it felt like I just wasn't part of like whatever society was in that school, whatever the community was in that school.
You were outside of it.
I just didn't feel like I was in. I wasn't in that circle at all. I don't know what it was exactly, but I think part of it was weight gain, put on a lot of weight when I was a teenager.
I know that feeling.
So mm-hmm. I think that just kind of naturally made me more of an outsider, because then people start to pick up on it, people start to, you know, bully you for your weight, and that makes you retreat even further.
Yeah, you just go into your own skin.
Of course
there's no way out. Do you know what I mean?
You're way more comfortable around yourself.
Yeah,
even though you're not, because
but you're your only friend at times.
And then you do realize, you do kind of think to yourself, well, I know that I'm overweight, I know that I've put on too much weight, but then comfort in food, etc. But I also think that it's really strange. It's almost like you bully yourself, which I feel like then it just exacerbates the whole thing, because not only do you receive kind of outside criticism from people who you thought were your friends, you then criticise yourself behind closed doors.
Oh,
you're not happy in your skin.
You don't. You hate your. You can hate yourself and not almost know it, but be so like self sabotaging all the time. Like you say, with food, we're just sitting around not doing anything, not leaving the house. Because I think we were probably the last generation of kids who would, when they were younger, go out and play with their friends. Like actually play. We still had PlayStations and whatnot, but it wasn't solely that. It was especially probably in your like 7, 8, 9, 10. That's when you were going out and probably getting called in by your mum or dad for coming for your dinner.
Yeah.
Obviously, teenage years was different, but whereas now it is simply you're either a delinquent, you know, 14 riding around on a bike, or you're at home streaming. Do you know what I mean? So go into what you were saying. When you like, that's your release. That's your relief of being going into school and being bullied by people who probably once were your friend a few years previous, but now they're in a different social group, and like you said, they've became popular and are trying out different things. And again, even at that age, you can't really blame them, because, and I know for sure, like I did and said things to people which I would hate myself for now.
Yeah,
but if you were bullied at some point, you probably do a bit back to someone worse off than you. And it's like a horrible monopoly of, I was fat and ginger. Mm. I'm only ginger now, so it's all right. But I was fat and ginger, and we had a group, me and three other lads, and I was speaking about this the other day, and there was two ginger white guys, two black guys, and we were all fat. And it became like a two and a two. We became a group. And
a bit like the Four Seasons.
Yeah, and but it was like that was our group because we felt comfortable because we were all in our heads the same.
Yeah.
That was our social group. But you, like, I remember a year or two later, I would, to try and fit in with my old friends who, for like from primary school, let's say, I would be making fun of one of them, and I hated myself for it. But you kind of felt, well, if I can get out of it. Getting it, I'll happily pass on to someone else, which is absolutely, it's the worst, most horrible thing in the world. But when you're that age, it's a selfish thing of, how do I get away with not being bullied?
Yeah, I think that you do what is necessary. And I think that anybody who's been bullied has also bullied somebody else.
Yeah.
If you say otherwise, you're lying.
Yeah.
There's no way. And anybody is capable of it, because, like you say, it's almost like self-preservation. It's like it's a sense of, well, if I join in with what they're doing right now, taking the mickey out of somebody else, then they're not focusing on me.
Yep.
Which, like you say, it is selfish. And you look at it and think now, like, how could you be like that? But hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I don't suppose you put as much importance on it as maybe you should, but when you look back and think how far you've come personally, how much you've matured, how much your social perceptions have changed, you can kind of see that none of it really mattered. I think that it shaped a lot of why I'm introverted now,
mm-hmm.
but none of it really mattered, because you look at those people now, you look at the people that bullied you now, where are they? I mean, they're in the same position that I'm in, more or less. There's nobody that's gone on to be like overly successful or, you know, who's running their own business or anything.
Yeah.
There's nobody that's like, there wasn't really a reason for any of it. It was just a case of trying to fit in.
It was just a case of back then, that's, you know, like kids still do it now. It, you know, it's who's got the latest thing, who's mom or dad is doing that. What, you know what I mean? It's that whole thing of, I'm better than you. And
I think that's just human nature.
Yeah. And look, I still have friends, or like people I knew who were friends, let's say, and I still would look at them now thinking, you can still see bits and bobs when you do see on social media and Facebook and whatnot when people post updates, and it's there, like, you still got that bit in you. Like, most people haven't, but there's still one or two, and I just think to myself, there's something kind of insecure about it now to still be doing it at this age.
Yeah, I suppose that some people will carry that into adulthood.
Yeah.
In terms of like the traits, like showing off or wanting to belittle others or make people feel like they're less worthy, and you can do that now through the grace of social media.
Oh, Instagram's massive for it.
Instagram,
And I remember years ago, I would come off Instagram because it was this reel of, again, like people will say, showing you your best highlights and nothing more. I think it's considerably different now. than it was, and that's why I can use it now. But it became toxic because you would, it would be that comparison of they've got this, that they've got that, I haven't got that, or
but it's this kind of illusion of success.
Yeah.
Completely. Because you can't be as genuine as I think you should be on social media, especially Instagram. Because Instagram now is kind of this sharp pool of it, like everybody wants to be that person that everyone's going, oh, look at them, they're doing amazing. Look, they've got their own little business. And you don't know, like, behind the scenes, they're probably, like, crying before every photo, or they're, you know, really struggling in their personal life, or their business is in the tank. Like, they're making no money. They're, you know, they're basically in debt. They're looking into administration. You don't know any of that because on Instagram,
it's all hunky-dory.
Yeah, they post a picture and it looks like they're having an amazing time.
Yeah.
But do you not think that's more damaging?
It's because
just being like, because they're honest about everything.
Because in the same fashion, kind of gym influencers, body positive influence, all this kind of thing, you only see. Instagram is good for in some aspects because you will see some people put up, well, this is what I looked like 5 minutes ago, and this is what I look like now when I posed and when I kind of sorted out my clothing in a certain way and breathed in, and that's great. But you shouldn't have to do that in the first place. You shouldn't have to be like, well, this is the true reflection of something, you know? And that's why I think, especially like the younger generation now, they've got it tough because I think we kind of grew up with no social media.
Yeah.
So we knew one way, had social media, seen things a different way. And generally, I think probably most people would know how to differentiate what's real and what's not and what is normal day-to-day life and what isn't, and you know, struggling to pay bills 1 month, or you know, you haven't got the nicest car in the world, does it matter? No. Like you know what I mean?
I think that like that competition was still there in terms of like, I don't know, if somebody had the latest phone or they had a nice pair of trainers and whatever and you didn't, because quite frankly your parents couldn't afford it.
Yep.
I think there was still that level of competition in terms of other kids would bully you for that or take the piss. But it wouldn't feel as, it's not as everlasting because it's not on the internet forever.
No.
That's a massive problem. In terms of like cyberbullying and that now, it's a huge problem because you've now got a generation of kids that are constantly trying to create this persona for social media for the benefit of their friends or even not friends.
Yeah.
People like followers, people they want to, they want for them to be interested in.
They want validation from.
It is validation. And
I think that's where I when I mentioned the insecurity, that's what it is. It's getting validation from outside sources because for some reason you may not have had it growing up from your parents. You may not have had it growing up from friends or other family, and you just want that little like dopamine hit.
That's sad.
It's really sad.
It's the epitome of working class, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the classic working class stereotype. That kind of thankless existence. Like no, you're not getting thanked for anything, mate. Nothing. You're lucky to even be here.
Yeah.
Because you constantly hear it. You know, growing up, my granddad would always say, like, you're lucky, what was it? You don't know you're born.
Yeah.
Things like that. And when I was a kid, this and that happened. And it always makes up this story about what I used to get for Christmas and, like, some coal and a stick and stuff.
An
like
orange.
That, and maybe an orange.
Yeah, if he was lucky.
It's funny because there is that weird kind of strong mentality, though, of working class, which in the 40s and 50s was kind of born out of the war, rationing, living in like terraced houses that were full of frigging rats and tiny, cramped, these massive families in one house.
Eight people in one house.
Literally, like that came from that. And it's tough. It's a real tough mentality. However, now that times have changed and now that things have definitely moved to the other extremity, that's why they can't adapt now.
Yeah.
Because they have that mentality of what is depression? What's anxiety? What do you mean introverted?
Just get on with it. Yeah.
It's that kind of
man up.
We didn't have it is because they were like, we didn't have that. We didn't have that growing up. If they'd have like expressed any kind of social anxiety or like insecurity when they were a kid, they'd have been told to just shut up straight up. They'd have just been told to get on with it.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's hard to kind of not lambast a whole generation of people, but
here we go.
But it's true though, because then I look at things like my dad's generation. Even then, you kind of sometimes you look at it and think, well, if I'm not necessarily getting validation from my dad for certain things, not to say that I am, but hypothetically, that's because his dad was the same to him, and his dad was the same to him, and it just passes on from generation to generation. Whereas now, with social media, with kids at the way that they are nowadays, because there's a lot more external validation going on, it's almost like they expect it. It's completely switched. Completely switched. Because growing up, I was never hugged.
I was never loved. Hi, Mum. No, I'm talking about you, not me. I was loved.
I told her that I'm recording something. I don't know if she'll listen to it, because she probably won't, because she
hopes
so. Validate the fact that I'm doing something with my life.
Please send the link. We will need listeners to begin with.
No, but I think it's a case of, she was the same. I think she grew up in a household with three other siblings. So all the attention just wasn't on her.
Yeah, it wasn't like a single child where it was just them.
Because they weren't all kind of singled out for, like, they didn't go and do, I don't know, say my mum was into art.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't allowed to go and pursue that.
Oh, it wasn't the time for it, yeah.
No, because no. What you do is you get a trade.
Yeah.
You get a solid bit of employment behind you, and you get married.
Crack
on.
Child,
blah, blah. I mean, to be fair, that is actually a good example, because my dad...
Got a trade. Got a trade, solid employment.
The thing is, he's good at art. He's really good at art.
Yeah.
And he was going to go to art college. But I think in the end, it kind of came down to the opportunity just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't given to him.
So you just have to concede that and almost put it to the side.
I can't remember the exact circumstances, but I'm pretty sure that he sacrificed it for something else. I don't know whether it was like getting a job, or maybe it might have been his parents kind of saying,
come on,
you're not doing that. What are you talking about? Art college. You've got to go and get some money and pay me some board.
Yep.
Not to put them in a bad light, because
that was the normal.
Were different.
Yeah, it was the normal thing.
But then I was told the same thing when I was like 16. My parents were then going, when are you getting a job? So I think from that, it's just passed on.
As soon as you got your national insurance, they were applying for jobs for you, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that's, I think I had it very lucky, me and my brother and sister, because my mum, or being a single woman,
didn't give a shit about any of it.
I think she gave too much, to be honest, if you can.
Right, okay.
But like, there was never an... we were always going to get jobs as soon as you kind of turned 16 or whatever, and you could. But it was more... It was just an impetus of just do what you want to... You know, with my mum, it was always just do what you want to do whatever makes you happy. There was never any pressure of having to be the best in school. It was always do your best and that's fine. Whatever, if that's an A, if that's a D, if that's whatever, if that's dropping out, if that's going to university, fine.
Yeah.
But there was never... I remember, obviously, being a single parent household, we obviously got EMA back in, you know, sixth form.
Yeah.
I just give
that... Like 20 quid every...
It was 10, 20 or 30 quid a week, depending on your thinking. I got 30. No. Well, for us, it was every week. So I'd give...
Every week, though.
I'd give...
20 quid.
That would be... Even though I just started working, I would give that £30... to my mum every week, or the equivalent of, you know, for board. But she would set a boundary of, this is what I'd want from you. But it wasn't, well, I want half of your wages. It was just, if you can give me this much a month.
Yeah.
And again, it was a discipline thing, but it was also, you know, she needed the money. Absolutely fine. I'd never begrudge anything. But there was never a, you know, if you've not like got a full-time job by 18 or gone to university or of that ilk where you're kind of... doing something where in 5 years I can see it. There was never any pressure. And I said, like, we had and I know everyone can say about mums or dads, we had the greatest childhood in that regard, because we had everything that we could ever want from someone who had nothing to give.
Yeah.
But she gave that, not in terms of financial or whatever. It was, you know, she did everything, you know, we could ever ask for, but there was never any pressure.
Mm.
And you kind of look back on it and think, could you have done with a little pressure or there? And would you, if you had a little bit of pressure from, let's say, your dad or whatever, would that have put you on a different track somewhere? But I think we all naturally just went to where we would have gone anyway.
But Sainsbury's.
Yes.
Is that because it's got an orange logo?
No. It was, if you want to, God, here we go, first episode. Back in school, in sixth form, one other mate, he'd applied, got a job like that, applied online, did the online test, pathetic 30-question test, got the job like the next day. and we were all there like, we all wanted jobs for Christmas, and it just became that, and then it ended up being over a decade. So, you know, when...
I think a lot of people, though, start as temps, don't they? That's how it all starts.
But that's not really the case anymore, I wouldn't say.
Not from the beginning.
No. I think people now, it's more of a job jumping thing throughout their life now, I think. I think, especially the younger generation, because it is, again, kind of going back to social media, it's this quick fix of, I don't want to do that. I'm not happy in that. I don't get my weekends there.
I want more money.
To go to bloody Ibiza or Marbella or something to put on Instagram.
Do you know how old that made you sound?
Yep. Yes.
To go to bloody Ibiza or wherever it is those kids go.
Ibiza.
Just like, what was the bloody band from the 90s? I want Aqua. What were they called?
You're having a laugh. Yeah, I'm a rap and hip hop fan here, you know. I'm not a band person.
We're going to
like
Ibiza.
We're
going
to have a party. Yeah.
We can't get copyright strikes, can we?
Nah, no one's listening to this. We'd have to email off. Hey, someone's been, no.
I don't even know who bloody sang it now. Venga Boys, that was it.
Oh, yeah.
Venga Boys.
There you go.
Come on, you don't remember that?
No, and I remember the song now you said it, but I don't. Anyway. Anyway.
You never went to school discos, did you?
Oh yeah, I had the Flame T-shirt.
Did you really?
Flame T-shirt, man.
As well.
Flame that was Flames. Yeah, I had the jeans with the metal
chain.
The chain.
Yeah.
And the, like, you'd have a bit of a design on the back.
Oh, that's so
was
cool.
It Voy? Like the, it was like a logo on the back. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But again, you know, a spiky hair, whatever, gelled up. Again, I was, I was doing, and it didn't suit either of us. I was doing that. Because like other friends did that. I was just trying to fit in. Look, genuinely, I was ginger. And I don't know if there was another ginger person in my year in primary school.
Are you trying to basically say...
I was one of a kind. But it's, you know what it is? When you look around and someone else isn't like you, there's no one else. You've got no one to buddy up with.
God,
do you know what I mean?
So you body up with yourself and you wear a Flame T-shirt.
Flame T-shirt.
That's one way to body up with yourself. That's one way not to make friends.
That's one way for every girl to go.
That's where the ick started, I'm telling you.
The ick.
You wearing a fucking Flame T-shirt. The ick.
Just generally.
Yeah,
just,
you know, like
just the universal ick started with me
general...
when I was 8 wearing a Flame T-shirt. Okay.
Definitely.
Wow.
100%. You stood in the corner of a school disco. Flame T-shirt.
Just bopping my head to Cha Cha Slide. Yeah. So I would say my introvertedness.
Yeah.
The first time there was other things. Now I look back on that thinks, oh yeah, that was definitely that. The first time I ever noticed it, it was 2017. It was April, and this is where you know I'm really good at dates. There's no football here. No, it was Anthony Joshua versus Klitschko, if I remember rightly. And we were all up at my dad's. My dad lives up in Hull. And he was having food, barbecue, like drinks, whatever. Me, my sister, my brother, cousin. There was a bunch of us all went up. And I remember just being sat there. I drove up because I just started driving.
Yeah.
I purposely only had one beer in like the first couple of hours because I could just feel something. I was there like, if I need to drive somewhere, I don't want to have anything else to drink. And I remember in my head, I just didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest thing because I'd never felt anything like it before, really. You felt a bit nervous if you went somewhere you didn't really know anyone. I was with friends and family. I was with people who, you know, I'd be going out on the piss with. You know what I mean? I was with, like, who you want to be with. And I remember just sat on the sofa and looking around. And, you know, that whole thing of you can be sat in a room full of people and you just feel alone. And I felt sick inside. And I remember basically going, just, like, I think I messaged my dad and just said, can we just go and have a chat upstairs? And again, that's even strange because as much of an open person I am, that's a weird thing to do in that situation where there's 20 people or, you know, having drinks, having a laugh, waiting for the boxing a bit later on. And I just remember saying, I think I just burst out crying. I was like, I don't want to be here. And he kind of understood it because a few years previous I'd gone through kind of, you know, depression and the rest of it, but I'd never ever felt kind of any anxiety or kind of that introvertedness kind of aspect. And he just, you know what he said to me? He goes, because I think it must have been 7:30 at this point. He says, if you leave now and you do 80, you'll make it back in time to watch the fight back home.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a, oh, come on, just, you know, you'll be all right, have a few drinks. That's all he said. He goes, fine. And he just basically said, if you break the speed limit for the next 90 miles, you'll be fine.
So in some ways, his advice was, his heart was in the right place.
No, completely.
Advised you to break the law.
Well, he did say, if you do 77 to 80, you're all right, because they weren't really, 10% is what they allow. And at that time of night, it was a Saturday night. You know what I mean? There's not going to...
There should be a boxing match on.
Yeah.
Hey, people watching the boxing.
Exactly. They're not out there looking for a courser. And I basically, my brother knew, he came up into the room because he knew something was going on. He basically let me go out the front door where no one else could see me, got on my car, left. Okay. And then by the time I got home, he'd obviously told everyone. But in my head, I felt, I don't know whether it was a shame, I felt scared to walk out in front of everyone and be like, I'm going home. To probably be asked a question. And then kind of from there, and again, it was a feeling, by the time I got home, I was fine. And I don't know whether it was a home comfort thing, but then kind of for a few years after that, when my best mate, he was at uni in Nottingham, and there'd be times where we would be all pre-drinking there, and I can just remember being like sat, and all his mates were great, and I knew him, got along with them.
Yeah.
I just sat there like, I don't want to be here.
Mm.
But how do you get out of that situation where, you know, you might have got the bus, you know, to Nottingham, let's say, you know, it's 11:30 at night, they're all, you know, they're all going out. And it became a thing where I would basically just vanish and just go home. And it genuinely became
That's now a thing though, isn't it?
What?
Like a thing that like people know that you do.
Yeah. It became a thing. I just disappear.
Yeah, you'll just go, nah, bad enough now.
I will always generally tell one person so they know I've not been like killed. but now I'm a lot better with it. But back then it was a genuine thing of, I think it was like an inbuilt thing where you defeat yourself before you even had a chance to actually convince yourself otherwise. You've said, you don't want to be here. Yeah. You need to get out of here.
Do you think that is it something that's gradual that comes on? Or is it something you feel before the event? Like, are you, obviously, I'm imagining that you feel some kind of trepidation before the event anyway.
Yeah.
Because you know that at some point you'll want to disappear.
Yeah.
But do you feel an optimism when you first get there? Are you feeling that up for it?
Do you know, like in the days leading up to it, I think you, because like, you know, if it's a Saturday night, you're working Monday to Friday, let's say, or whatever.
Yeah.
You're looking for, I think for me, it was you're looking forward to it that much.
Yeah.
You've over fucking done it. You've built it up to be something massive. But yeah. Really,
yeah.
It was a thing we did weekly or every other week, depending on work. We'd be going to Knots all the time. Do you know what I mean? You'd be getting the Red Arrow. It would pre-drinks. It was like your second home at one point, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or even back home when you'd be having drinks. I'd be the same in Derby sometimes. Like back in Derby, I remember when I first turned 18, and only looking back on it like now, do you realise what it was that even then, where I'd be studying walkabout, me, my friends, my brother, I'd always have to have a drink in my hand. So they'd go out smoking.
Yeah.
That was my, if everyone else was talking to someone else.
Yeah.
I had to have a drink so that if someone wasn't talking to me, something to do. I didn't smoke.
Yeah.
So you'd be outside the smoking area.
Well, it makes you almost feel a little less awkward, I suppose.
Yeah.
You can do something.
But I'd also have to have a drink to be a certain level of drunkenness. Because if I started sobering up, I think then I knew I didn't feel like I belonged there. I didn't feel like I couldn't go and dance without, but I couldn't go and dance back then without being a level of drunk where I'm not gonna remember this tomorrow, because I felt embarrassed. Because you've not seen me dance, thankfully.
I've seen the videos. I've seen you Britney Spears, the fucking doing your routine in front of the mirror. I've seen the videos.
Okay.
Yeah. Your mom sent them in.
But last year at my partner's cousin's wedding.
Yeah.
It wasn't kind of a massive drinking kind of occasion. It was for me.
So
it was great.
Bladdered.
No, I had a great time. It was a free bar, and I thought someone's got to utilize this. It's been paid for.
This is a bit strange though, isn't it? Having a free bar at an event where 90% of people aren't really going to have a drink.
Like, well, not massive drinkers. I saw five bottles of Grey Goose, and I said, someone's got to do something here to make a dent.
So
that
was
me.
You did the honourable thing there.
Yep.
Yeah.
To on for the team.
Hero.
But
hero.
That night in front of obviously all the family who I've known for years, but like
it's
a lot
good
of
job, though,
ex.
It?
Yeah.
It's a good job they've known you for years.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Here he goes up there, Mick Jagger.
No, well, they didn't know it before. They know it now.
Oh,
and But it was that night where, like, all the other, obviously, obviously her cousin's partner's family's there, and obviously I've never met them, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was having, you couldn't get me off the dance floor. I was having to come off just to stay hydrated, you know. I was like, two drinks. Yeah. But it was silly stuff. Like, and I look back at videos thinking, that's great. Whereas, you know, if I'd picture myself doing that a year previous, 5 years previous, I would shudder at the thought. I would hate it.
Oh, God.
I can now, because I think it's with the great spirit. You know how good of a night you had.
I don't know. You know, there is a video from my mum's wedding. It's always a wedding.
Of course.
Where I had a wig on. I don't know where it came from.
Is this not it now?
I'm assuming. I had a wig on, and I was dancing away. And I look at that now because I'm still showing it sometimes as a, this is funny, isn't it? And I still look at that and go, oh my God, that's awful. I can't watch it back. It's awful. But then I struggle to...
I can't listen to myself back.
Why are you going to struggle with this?
This is going to massively... I'm going to have to be half cut for this.
I don't know, because listening to my voice, I guess I've got used to it because I've been in bands and stuff previous.
Yeah.
So I'm not so bothered with that. Image, though, oh, it's a big thing. Photos...
I can understand it.
Yeah, it's bad. This is why we're not on video. This is exactly why. It's not because you can't fit. You wouldn't be able to fit a tripod in here amongst all the plants. It's not that. It's not that. No, it's. I don't know. I've always struggled with that, though. I think, though, that again comes from childhood, being overweight.
Yeah.
Not being happy in my own skin.
It's probably that lack of confidence from a young
age. There's some pictures and stuff of myself, and I'll think, actually, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
Happy with that, because I was probably at, like, a decent weight. Probably didn't realise it at the time.
You took it for granted.
Yeah. I look back now and think, fucking hell, I used to be quite a thin lad. And now I look at myself and think, what happened?
You've had a kid.
Long-term relationship.
And a kid.
And no. Well, that'll do it, yeah. I was on the straight and narrow, but, you know, having a child takes you back to the donuts more than you believe.
Convenient.
It's stressful.
It is convenient.
What, having a child?
No,
the least convenient thing anyone could ever do for themselves. I'm telling you now, honestly.
But you planned it, so it's...
No. What happened was, it was planned for me, you see. She'll love that I've said that.
Yeah.
She'll love that. No, it was planned.
You're banking on her listening to this. That's the probably...
No, listen. When I was in a band...
Yeah. Oh, God.
She used to come to every gig. That's loyalty right there.
Did she want... God, that's love. That's what that is. That's love.
She got no jobs to do, so she thought, well, why not? She had to be one of the five people that made up the fucking audience, so...
Your mum, your dad, partner.
No. My mum, my dad. No.
Not a chance.
No validation.
Not a chance.
No, it was... She always came to the gigs, I think because she enjoyed the music. And she was kind of like, it was really strange, actually. It was kind of like the Yoko Ono.
Oh, Lord.
To the Beatles.
Oh, Jesus.
But not in a bad way.
Is that what you...
Because there were four of us in this band.
Right, okay.
And then I got in a relationship with her, and then she kind of just, she came to film nights with us and stuff like that. So she integrated herself into the group. So
Four lads.
Yeah, so looking at it, it does
and,
look...
And she ended up with you.
Hey.
And this is on the basis, I've not even seen the other three.
And I'm not about to comment on that, you see. So, no, I'd hope that she'd listen to this. I've told her I'm doing it, so.
I have.
I've probably told more people than you, I think. Not because I want to...
You want to get the followers in early. You want to build it up, and I appreciate that.
Well, I've got a Patreon that I'm just starting. I'm optimistic is what I am.
No, to be fair, I think I haven't said anything to anyone because I used to... Probably in my early kind of mid-20s, I used to say I was doing something or like planning for something.
Yeah.
And the minute it doesn't come to fruition, you then have to tell all those people.
Yeah,
it's a bit like a relationship or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're starting to see someone, people always want to know. And they want to know for the right reasons, which is great.
Yeah.
But then if it doesn't work out, it's like, oh, where's so-and-so? You know, you have a family gathering, where's so-and-so?
Yeah.
And then you've got to explain it to 25 people. And this kind of like venture or doing something, doing whatever.
Yeah.
The exact same. So now I kind of live by, and my brother was great growing up because I would look at him and he is a reserved, quiet person. He'll tell you what you need to know and nothing more. And I think that's probably the best way to live your life in most regard.
See, I think I'm a weird mix of that. I think that because I'm introverted and private, I don't give away much. But then if I'm excited about something, if I'm passionate about something that I'm doing,
yeah,
I want to tell people. Because I guess I do want that validation. It all comes back down to it. Because I want people to go, oh, that's really interesting. I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, that's where your enthusiasm comes from. So you're going to slag me off now, aren't you?
I know. I was going to say, I can't wait to another podcast in the most saturated market on the internet. I mean, that's what the world needs.
It is a saturated market. It is. Yeah. However, I don't care because...
Yeah, no, but this when we had this conversation, but again, that's why I've only told, again, the two people I have, is because I almost want to surprise people with it from my point of view.
Yeah.
How do I put it? We have a big family group chat. I just want to, in a short while, go, hey, guys, just started something. Here you go. Rather than, because this has been in the pipeline for a little while now, but obviously you've had a child and schedules and whatnot, and we've kind of let it come to a natural start.
Yeah.
May have started a bit earlier, but that was on me. and you
bottomless fucking brunch. That's all I'll say.
And you just kind of go, you again, it is that shock of you don't want to build something up, because then actually people's expectations can already be off the mark.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's going to be like, oh, great. Oh, yeah, I'll give it a listen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'd rather do that. So like when I am doing something like a cold plunge, I enjoy that and I'm enthusiastic. I've got that in there.
What
no, but there's nothing to that. There's no people going, yeah, you're fucking great. You know, do your cold plunge.
There's somebody looking over your fence going, who am I, Michael, getting that cold plunge? That would be really weird.
It would be weird. Cause
I
had
neighbours?
No.
Are you that friendly?
Next door looks like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right, have you told him that? Because that might be why he's not friendly with you. No, you move in, take a fucking lasagna round or something.
Definitely.
Right, I tell you what, you look the spit of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Would you tell your next door neighbour, who you've probably said hi to twice, that?
Yeah, no.
No. It would be weird if anyone was saying anything to me in the cold plunge, because I put my headphones in. Wendy could be shouting expletives out the window to me, and I would not know. So, yeah.
I think it would be quite funny, though.
Would you?
Ironic now if it happens. You get that cold plunge tomorrow morning.
Well, it's not particularly cold now, but yeah.
Yeah, but you've got ice, haven't you? You've got your ice packs and...
Yeah.
You have cold showers now, don't you?
Hey, gotta, you know, proper doing all the fucking, you know, popular stuff now.
What's the guy's name?
Wim Hof.
That's it.
Yep. But the problem, okay, we're going on to another tangent here now. The problem with Wim Hof, though, is, and it's not a problem, great and all that.
I was starting to be for it.
But no. But, and I don't blame him for it, but now you can buy a 2.5 grand package where you go and do it with him.
Right. Yeah, everything's right. Marketed. Yeah.
Yeah. And
or,
if you're
you
so
sit in Michael's back garden next to wheelie bins for free. It's up to you.
You don't have to go in the plunge. You can just sit in the garden.
It's up to you. You can just sit and watch him.
No.
Because
look,
he likes being watched.
But
cold plunge. The fucking freak.
But when
Jeffrey Dahmer's watching.
Yeah. I fucking hope not. But when I do that, obviously it's one of those things you want to tell people about, because like that kind of thing, there's nothing to it. It's just me
there's
doing.
No,
no, it's me doing something where no one else has to experience that. You know what I mean? No one else has to see me in my trunks get in and be shivering for 4 minutes. You know, but
unless you film it and put it on the internet.
Yep.
Which
not happening.
Now,
no, definitely not. I'll do it. I'll do it in the winter when it's like horribly cold.
Absolutely shameless.
Yeah. Thank you. But with that, again, there is just you doing it and there's a positive side effect and effects from it where you want to tell people, because actually they might be like, oh, that might be something, you know, to almost do myself. This isn't that kind of thing where someone's going, oh, you know what, I'll start a podcast. Because they've already tried and failed. So it's not going to happen.
I'll tell you what, I think that's the story of my life, though. In terms of, I've tried a lot of different things. In terms of like the media and the arts and stuff like that, because I've always been interested in it. When I was growing up, I wanted to be this and that in terms of the art world. And then I started to play guitar, was in bands, blah. Nothing has ever really worked out. And I think, but you know what it is? I was thinking about this the other day. Part of me is a bit like, is it because you've tried too many different things?
And not
and
stuck to one almost.
Like mediocre at like a few different things.
Yeah.
But you've not excelled in anything. Not to say that I don't think I'm any good at like, say, playing guitar. Because I think I'm at a decent level.
Yep.
But then I think, well, why have the bands never got anywhere? Not. Then when I go into it and, you know, further, there are a lot of other factors. However, you look into, like, say, at one point I was really into animation, animation. Got into, like, trying to make cartoons. Then it just stopped. Because I lose interest so quickly in certain things, unless I'm really, really passionate. Music is one thing that I would say I've stuck to, because I started playing when I was, like, 12, 13, and I am still doing it.
Yep.
And I stuck to, like, being in bands for a long time. I think a lot of the reason why the bands didn't work was because of other people. But I think that is because...
So you're just blaming other people now?
Well, it is true.
Yeah, okay.
No,
okay.
It is.
Yeah,
okay. It is. But they would have had their own reasons.
Yeah. But well, then, life gets in the way.
Of course it does. There's loads of different things. Like
kids, jobs, whatever.
Yeah. Loads of stuff gets in. I mean, doing this now is probably the worst time for me to be starting up a new thing because...
I know.
You know, I've not long had a child, as you've mentioned.
Yep.
However, is it not the best time? Because then you think, well, if you can't do it now, when you've got that newborn and you've got other things to think about, then you're not going to do it when things are easy either.
No.
You're just not going to have that motivation. So I think actually you need that kind of a little bit of stress to make it work. But nothing comes easy. You look at like bands that came from nothing, etc. Yeah. They all kind of, there's not many that came into the industry
and
were just overnight sensations.
No.
It's hard bloody work.
And usually the kind of things are all those overnight sensations are one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, I mean, some people say, yeah, great to be a one-hit wonder because, you know, whatever, but that's not long-term. But I think with you, thank you for telling me this will be finished in 3 episodes and you don't stick to things. But I think the thing is, and this reminds me of a quote, and I love my quotes, you know that, was Jimmy Carr. He was on, I think it was Diary of a CEO, and he says, it was an old, I think, Chinese proverb, and it was, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, the second best time is now. Yeah. So essentially, you know, it just means you didn't do it then, just do it now. So when you talk about motivation, and this is the same when it comes to like fitness and going to the gym or any of this, it's motivation is only a very, very small, minute bit. It's discipline where, and me and my friends will say this, getting up in November and December to go to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning when it's dark and it is freezing and you do not want to. That, doing that when you don't want to do it, and I found this out now by doing stuff, it sounds like a cold plunge where you're literally just putting yourself in cold water for 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
When you're stood outside and it's windy and blowy in February and you do not want to do it, you do it. You don't just get the actual effect of the cold water and the ice or whatever. You get the effect of, I just did something that I told myself I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And then I've achieved something massive by doing that.
Yeah.
And you do that constantly then. It becomes almost a habit of the kind of thing of, I'll do it tomorrow. Well, actually, I'll do it now. Feel good about it. It's done. And it is like a knock-on effect. And I think the more you now do those things in your life in just small bits of it, even if it's just something, doing something in your house where you think, you'll come around to it soon.
Yeah.
Actually, just saying, turn the TV off, let me go and do it. I'm going to do it. Great.
Oh, yeah. There's definite gratification from just getting up and doing something. Definitely.
Yeah.
It's the, like you say, it's the getting up and going that's the difficult thing.
It's that first whatever. So like
that's,
that.
That's not saying that I'm going to
piss off in
quit this in 3 episodes. It's not, because if anything,
if you get 2 out of you, it'll be success.
Hey, listen, if they go anywhere, you can just, you know, live off the royalties for the rest of your life.
I don't think that's gonna happen.
Don't worry about that.
No,
out with songs, not so much podcasts. Yeah,
you don't get royalties. No, Lord, no.
On the radio.
Yeah.
We ain't going nowhere near the radio.
You're not getting anywhere near anywhere.
But I think though, I don't know what it is. I think that because I've tried a lot of different things and they haven't worked out, it's almost, again, it's a bit like a confidence thing in terms of you get knocked down so many times and you think, well,
what's the point?
Yeah, why am I even bothering? Because I wasn't in a band for, I don't know, a good few years, like 3-4 years. But then you find that, like, you stop playing guitar so much. Then you find that you don't sing so much, or you don't. And then suddenly, I think turning 30 was a massive thing.
Yeah, because we said this,
turning 30, you look at it and go, well, why have I stopped doing that? I've been playing since I was 12. Why stop now? If I've managed to stick to something like that for so long, there must be something about it.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks volumes. I think if you are enjoying something and you're into it, I think that's one way to stay motivated. Like, because it's what you get out of it. Like you say in the cold plunge or the gym, you're getting results out of it. You're getting a positive mentality out of it. Therefore, it's positive reinforcement. You want to keep doing it because you want to keep feeling that positive reinforcement.
It's giving you like it's the endorphins. It's giving you a bit of a rush.
Yeah.
It's giving you something, and you're there like I want that every day almost.
Which you genuinely won't get from everyday life.
No.
Unless you are doing something that you're really passionate about, or like for a job, or you're, I don't know, traveling the world, or you're doing something different and unique every day, then you're not going to be.
You're not desperate.
You're not going to get the same feeling from it at all.
No.
You're just not. But then that's life, isn't it? You know, if you. That's again the working class thing of you almost settle. So you
settle for the day to day of work, and look, that's absolutely fine. And like you said, turning 30, when it obviously you turned 30 before me, but when it was approaching, it was I
saw how fucking scary it wasn't it. You looked at me.
I looked at you and go, oh,
shit,
fuck.
He looks tired. You know,
it's only been a week.
He looks dodgy.
It was that you start looking at your life and you're going, what have I done?
Yeah.
Like not in a what have I got? You know, what can I show off? Whatever. It's what have I done? Like it is that kind of mentality of. If I was to die in a year, what do I want to do in the next year, let's say?
Hey, listen, cheery. This is where we're going with this now. If I was to die in a year's time...
No, but it's true. You know, no one's guaranteed anything, but it...
Oh, he's going to do it.
It was
he's going to say the fucking bus analogy.
No, you never know when the bus is coming, and that's... And I know I say that. No, and I say that, but it's true, because, again, like, we all
to
think...
To be fair, though, they do have an app now. For the buses, so you.
Hey, Ryan Dia.
No. To come.
Yeah, but not when it does.
No. So actually, your analogy does work.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you never know.
Because you never actually know. Is the bus due, Michael? I'm asking you.
Just drive right past you. And the thing, but that's the thing. It's.
Yeah.
It was a case of obviously again when we spoke about this, there is that kind of fear of, why am I going to do it and put it out there? You know. But then it's like, well, it's just something you want to do. And it's a case of, let's go and do it. If you want to go run a marathon, go fucking run a marathon. It doesn't matter about what time or what anyone else thinks about you. That's
another thing. That's another element of it, is worrying too much what other people think about it. Which I guess I can see your point now in terms of not telling many people, because, like you say, it'll be a nice surprise.
And hopefully.
But it'll be kind of I didn't realise he was doing that.
Came out of the blue. Yeah.
Hopefully they'll listen to it and then enjoy it and listen to it again.
And when we do three episodes.
Yeah.
And
then they'll just replay it for the rest of their fucking lives.
When we do a fourth and say, sorry guys, it's over now.
But it is though. It's
time. It's hitting 30. Time's moving. Yeah, life's going quite quick now.
It is.
What are we doing? And you saying, obviously, you've had a kid and this is ultimately the worst time in terms of having actual time.
Yeah.
But probably also the best, because it makes you...
Yeah.
Disciplined and motivated to keep doing other things.
Yeah, because you have something to organize and work towards.
I thought you were going to say look forward to. Did you not say you've got something to look forward to other than looking after your lovely child and partner? No, but you have got something outside of your day-to-day work relationship where you can go, that's my thing.
Yeah, I think having something like that to plan and organise and motivate yourself to do, it does keep you going, because otherwise, like you say, you're waking up, you're doing the same thing every single day, you're going and doing your job, then you're going out, it's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
You need something. Well, I don't know, it depends on who you are.
No, I
think introverts in general are kind of more inclined towards these kind of outputs. Things like writing songs, or you know, writing fan fiction, or
it's expressing themselves because they may not necessarily be able to do it in the outside world.
It's expressing themselves in their kind of safe zone, like where they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, this probably isn't like the most comfortable thing for an extrovert to do. However, I don't know. It depends how you view it. If you're viewing this as there's a lot riding on it, and you know, you've got like, if you were further down the line,
you've got bills to pay.
Well, this is it.
Sign up a Patreon.
Yeah, if this was literally your income, that kind of thing, and there was a lot riding on it, you've got sponsors and all that kind of stuff, you're on YouTube and you've like there is a lot more ride on it. However, I think by that point you've almost built yourself up to that.
Yeah.
Up to that level, like that mindset. Whereas now, because there's literally nothing riding on this. This is just two people like
in a kitchen.
Chat. It's literally
just having a chat and just putting into effect what we kind of said 6-7 months ago we wanted to, because we kind of said something we kind of both wanted to do.
Yeah.
It came out in a conversation and we said, well, we'll give it a go. Because yeah. I actually remember you messaging me a little while after we had that kind of jokey conversation saying, if we were to do it, how do you want to go about it? Yeah. And I obviously wanted to, but I almost needed that message from you to actually, because I needed someone on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
And obviously the right person who I'm still looking for. So if you want to,
please apply to the email address.
And that's what it is. It's just kind of a push in the right direction and going, there's nothing right on this for us. It's just putting something out there that in 5 years, if it does work out, great. If it doesn't work out, great, because you tried something, didn't work out, sound.
Yeah.
And by that point, you've probably onto something else and doing something else. But always that, I wonder if I just, you know.
That's exactly it. That's my thoughts of like my 20s was trying to do things like I went to uni, didn't work. Went to, tried different bands, didn't work. Tried so many different things and they didn't work out. But then not looking at that as kind of like a failure, like my 20s was just like pissing about.
It was something.
And I think, do you know what though? This project here though is something that I've not overly thought about it, which I think is key to it being natural, because I've not like put a load of pressure on it. I'm not thinking like, what am I going to talk about? Am I even going to be like interesting to listen to? Because I think if you
overdo it, and then you're not your natural self. Like you came in here today, I was not prepared. I had not put enough preparation into this.
You know, well, this is funny because you knew when I was coming. You told me the time.
Yep.
To come.
Man, I still wasn't prepared.
And I turned up, and you still weren't ready.
Yep.
That says a lot. Do you know, actually, that's quite a fucking red flag if you look at it. I mean, I'm telling you now, it's good news for the future podcasts, isn't it? Future episodes.
Which will be coming shortly. Is that a wrap for the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. Yeah? Happy?
Yeah.
Good. So, guys, that's episode one done. If you do manage to hear an episode two, it means we haven't completely caved in yet. Yeah? Take care.
Yeah. Sayonara.